I'm Ava Hartling. Welcome back to the Brand is Female podcast. This season of our podcast is brought to you by TD Bank Group Women in Enterprise. TD helps women in business achieve success and growth through its program of educational workshops, financing, and mentorship. Visit thebrandisfemale.com/podcast and follow the link to find out how TD can help you. In this episode, I'm spotlighting N.O.R. Collective, a Montreal-based sustainable clothing brand founded by Katie Green and Kristen King, who also run the branding agency August Strategy. The duo met a decade ago at L'Oréal. They now have merged style and eco-consciousness in their knitwear for men and for women, focusing on creating anyplace essentials that are both versatile and environmentally responsible. With 92 million tons of clothing waste ending up in landfills each year, N.O.R. is tackling the issue head-on. Their innovative use of stole knitting machines allows them to produce garments with less than 1% textile waste, a significant improvement over traditional methods. Using certified organic and recycled materials, N.O.R. is setting a new standard in sustainable fashion. Join me as I explore how Katie and Kristen are reshaping the clothing industry, one low-waste garment at a time.
This is so fun for me.
It is so fun.
Kristen and Katie, it's such a pleasure having you on The Brand is Female today. Thank you for making time.
We're happy to be
here. You're having us.
We're here to talk about N.O.R., but you ladies also have another business. So obviously there'll be questions in regards to both, but I do want to get into everything that you've built with the brand. And congrats, because this week you've just received a CAFA nomination for N.O.R. in the sustainability category.
Exactly. Yeah, we were really excited and surprised in some ways. We're quite young to get a nomination like that. It means a lot to us. You know, CAFA and Vicky have been really supportive on our journey. So it's going to be special to go in October and see what happens.
Well, congrats and fingers crossed.
Yes.
Before we get into more recent developments, I like to start these conversations by going back in time with my guests. So I want to ask each of you, when you were growing up, what kind of career were you imagining for yourselves in the future? What were you picturing yourself doing from a professional standpoint later in life? Maybe Kristen first, because she's laughing.
Yeah, mine is pretty funny because I always imagined myself in the medical field. And as soon as I reached maybe like middle school age, I was obsessed with becoming a plastic surgeon. So I had like some projects in class and showcased like how I could get there. And it went all the way to university when I started in medical sciences the first year and ended up really staying in science throughout my entire university career. So it went pretty long, but we can see that I didn't do anything in sciences after graduation. I went directly into marketing. So dreams to different realities.
And what made you choose marketing at that point? What made you pivot from science or
medical field?
Honestly,
I think it was organic. So I filtered through my undergraduate from medical science into chemistry. And by the end of my chemistry degree, I was so attuned to doing scientific classes that I was taking them as electives. And I knew in the back of my head, I always loved beauty specifically. So I imagined myself becoming a cosmetic chemist and then eventually going into having my own brand or working in the space of some sort. But then approaching graduation, I really started to think of if I was going to do my master's, how would that look in terms of graduate school? And I applied to L'Oréal on a whim. And then that kind of took me down that immediate path to marketing.
Well, okay, I see the link. There was like the chemist idea that kind of combined your
exactly.
two passions, basically.
Yeah.
Katie, what about you?
It's not that dissimilar. I mean, I don't think I had a clear path in my mind. I thought I wanted to be a lawyer, kind of one of those classic, you know, you're growing up, like, what's my path of success? And maybe having a limited lens on like what opportunities were out there that would really suit me. And so I have an uncle who I really admire, and he was a lawyer locally. And so I interned in high school with him and thought I was on this path to become a lawyer. I went as far as writing my LSATs. You know, I got accepted to Queen's Law School, and I ended up entirely pivoting, ended up doing a great honors bachelor communication with a double in political science and governance, which was interesting. I was in Ottawa. Mm-hmm. And then I just kind of let my path organically take me where I was going. And right out of university was hired actually as a lobbyist for a small firm in Ottawa. And I realized quite quickly how much I liked learning how to craft communications messages to impact decision making. And frankly, that led me to PR because it's not that dissimilar. You know, your audience is changing, but you know, how you craft a strategy and a message was similar. And so I did that. And in the end, I ended up marrying a lawyer. So I guess I still have something in that legal world, but
you're checking that box.
Yeah, check that
in
box,
a different way,
but not for me. Yeah. I think I made the right decision.
Well, but I see the link and I remember because we met originally. I think you were working for Vanna,
yes,
or just after Vanna.
Yeah, so I actually left the lobbying world because one of my clients was CTV Globe Media. Mm-hmm. That's what they were called at the time. I know there's been some changes since mm-hmm. then, but I ended up going to Vancouver to work for the Games as like the 51st employee of the Vancouver 2010 Games and worked there for 3 years and was partially PR, but it bridged my governance and political background. And so I was working with the government partners. And then, yeah, we met through Rona. You were at Rona?
Which was a sponsor.
A sponsor of the Games. Yeah, so we go way back.
Yeah. That long.
Yeah, yeah, we go way back. Cool. And then we reconnected actually when I moved after the Games. I came to Montreal and worked for L'Oreal. And that's where we reconnected.
Yeah. And you've both had corporate careers. So L'Oreal was part of it. And obviously today you are business owners. So at what point did it become obvious, or maybe it wasn't that obvious at first, but when did you first come up with the idea of starting your own business?
Yeah, we have a very, again, we're using that word organic, but really, I think Kristen and I couldn't have necessarily imagined where we are today in the time that we were sitting in corporate positions. What I think happened for both of us was we're both very open and we're very interested in growing and in our professional growth. And so I know for me, I had a great stint at L'Oreal and then at Aldo and, you know, leading global teams and doing really amazing things with big budgets. And there was an opportunity to kind of go on the consulting side. That was the first step. And we didn't sort of get together and plan it all out. Mm-hmm. It was actually, we both were in a situation where we could take on a project. Do we want to try it? Mm-hmm. And so we tried one project. We actually brought in somebody else who's very much part of our world now, Gab Dufresne. And the three of us did a project in the brand space and we loved it.
Mm-hmm. I think the best way to describe it is we were always interested in trying something, but we never had that push. Right. And then the pandemic happened.
Right.
And so early pandemic, the world is in disarray and suddenly it's not so scary to try something else. Mm-hmm. For me personally, I had been furloughed from a tech job that I had a great experience at, but it wasn't necessarily fueling my passions.
Yeah.
And so when Katie approached me to try a project together, it happened to be at the perfect time. Because it was May 2020. And so we had this space, I think, that we might not have had in any other scenario. And it worked out really well for us, organically building the agency and then rolling that into Andor Collective.
You know, you've been running the agency for a few years now.
4 years now. Yeah.
Congrats. And you decided to launch a clothing brand. And obviously you've spent time on the marketing side, on the branding side, working for, you know, a number of brands, mostly in the beauty industry or fashion and lifestyle. Yep. You were at Aldo as well. Where did the idea for Andor come from? And also, was that like a crazy dream at some point? Hey, how about we start a clothing brand?
I think we knew early on in the journey with August and the agency that Kristen and I were not only capable, but desired to build a brand of our own. We always said it was like a 5-year goal or like a journey.
Yeah.
And we weren't necessarily like stuck on a category. So I'll just start by saying, like, having gone from big corporate into like startups and founders, we were really inspired by like seeing what founders were building and building it for themselves. But then we also were realizing that we were helping these founders build their companies and didn't have a stake in it. Like we didn't have equity in those businesses. And oftentimes they were run by men. And we were kind of like, hey, we're two very capable women who frankly could do that. Mm-hmm. And so we were agnostic of what the product category or service or whatever would be that we would do.
Yeah. And I think I would add, like, having that experience with the different founders gave us perspective, not only to, hey, like, we could do this, but we were working so deeply with these brands and these businesses and these founders that we were able to get under the hood and start to understand what like a P&L looks like at this emerging business. Like, what does capital raising, how do you infuse that and how do you deploy the capital? And so it gave us an extra layer of confidence that we felt that we could successfully do it. And then I think Andor, you know, we wanted to be in a category, although we were agnostic, we wanted to be in a category that we were passionate about and one that needed change.
Okay.
There's so many brands and there's so many businesses. And when we were looking at how are we actually going to find a white space And also looking around, again, it was at the time when the world was turned upside down. Mm-hmm. And we really quickly landed on sustainability in fashion because it's such a massive and pervasive problem that nobody really seems to be able to tackle in a holistic and meaningful way.
And well, I was going to ask you, Venser, part of my next question, because it feels like in the fashion space, it's a saturated market. We know how tough it is for Canadian brands on the fashion side to take off, go anywhere. Were there any hesitations around, okay, are we crazy to do this? Is there going to be an audience for our product?
I mean, like every day.
Every day. But at the beginning, I'd say there's a blind confidence that we both have. Like we have a real, I don't know, it's maybe one of our superpowers is the kind of like, we're going to figure it out. But yeah, now that we're in it. We're faced with challenges every day. And to be honest, there's forces against us. You know, it's really a tough, we're realizing now, even from a capital raising perspective, kind of what the challenge of the category, forget being like women in business and being kind of a minority on the capital raising side, you know, all the challenges that we face in being in rooms with generally men and capital being deployed predominantly to men. But you know, you add the layer that we're in a category where people sort of are disenchanted or, you know, frankly, are still very concerned with the bottom line at all costs. And we're really trying to do things differently. And we are doing things differently. And where we find the most success is just talking to people that really are aligned with that vision and want to change the world and have a big, bold kind of stance on, frankly, where we are as a society with regards to our consumption and all the terrible things that happen in that supply chain.
So what did you think you could do differently? And obviously sustainability is at the heart of, you know, the vision for N.O.R. So what did you tackle to solve as far as issues around fashion and sustainability go?
Well, first, I think we wanted to demonstrate that fashion and sustainability can go hand in hand. So we wanted to be a zero compromise brand on both the clothes and the final product that we produce, and then how we are designing and creating them and ultimately disposing of them as well. So the real vision was once we started to learn about all the different areas within the supply chain, from what you design and produce all the way down to what happens to it when the consumer is done with it. We often say, like, once we uncovered those stones, we couldn't unsee what we saw. And so I think there was also the learning curve for us into, okay, what are the big areas that need change? And recognizing that one brand that we could find anyway in the market wasn't really tackling all of that. And so our sustainability promise is really kind of four main areas. The first one is design. So 80% of a product's sustainability actually starts with the design, because if it's not going to be worn in someone's closet for many occasions or for a long time, it's just not as sustainable. The second is we spent a lot of time learning about sourcing, what types of yarns we can use, what types of blends we can use to enhance the longevity, enhance the wearability component without compromising the end of life and the recycling. And then the third element is that we discovered a technology by way of our designer, Rosa, actually, called technical knitting or flatbed knitting. And that was really our aha moment, as we call it. So it's a way of producing that essentially eliminates pre-consumer textile waste. Usually in a cut and sew process, it's between 15 and 30%. And the way that we're leveraging this technology takes it down to less than 1%.
Wow.
And so that was a big moment for us to say, okay, wow, we can actually make an impact beyond where we're seeing a lot of sustainable brands today really making the touching. The other benefit of flatbed knitting is that we have a lot more control over minimums. We can test things in a really minimal way. And then having that real kind of agnostic yarn to many different products enables us not to have to invest in a ton of raw material, say, and producing one thing. And then the last piece is recycling. So clothing to landfill is a massive issue. Another stat is that there's every second a dump truck filled with clothes that goes somewhere in a landfill. And with all of the synthetic fibers, they don't ever break down. And so it was important for us to integrate recycling into our business model from the beginning. And so we have a partnership with a New York-based brand called Super Circle that powers our fiber-to-fiber recycling.
Love that.
Thank you.
This season of the Brand is Female podcast is made possible with the support of TD Women in Enterprise and Dirt About Confidently Building You. As a woman entrepreneur myself, I know I need all the support I can get. It takes sound advice plus guidance to the right connections, tools, and resources. What's great about TD services for women in business is their collaborative approach. TD can facilitate and connect you to workshops, coaching, and mentorship, and they engage other like-minded business leaders in an authentic way so we can share experiences and learn from each other. TD Women in Enterprise has banking specialists who are able to be proactive in the advice and guidance they give to women in business.
And you've talked about how you want clothing to become, you know, something that we really live with for a long time and wear again and again. And for that reason, you're not coming out with that mini seasonal collections, right? It's pieces that are really meant to be worn year round and for a long time.
Yeah, we like to sort of think of ourselves as the pivot away from fast fashion into conscious consumption.
Yeah.
And it's a hard one for people. We've been programmed to kind of buy that way. And
yeah.
The whole ecosystem is set up to kind of create that desirability and that newness. Yeah. And it's like a drug, you know, think about the emails you get in your inbox, and, you know, offering new styles. And so it is also for us to hold hands and really stand by our charter. And there's a lot of pressures forcing us to like figure out a way around that.
Yep.
Because even for us, like we're looking at wholesale as a great opportunity. And the first question becomes, well, what's next?
Yep.
What other SKUs are coming?
Exactly.
Or showrooms that don't want to hold us necessarily because we're going to sit up against other brands that have hundreds of SKUs per season. And so that's okay for us. That might mean that we have to find the partners that really understand, like we have with Holt Renfrew and H Project, who've taken us in and frankly have seen, you know, the value in what we're creating and want to do this together and don't mind, you know, that we're breaking tropes of the fashion system. And so, yeah, that's been a decision that we made from the start. And it's one that we'll just continue to add to the collection. The responsible way is to build a capsule wardrobe where everything that we create should be mix and match and be able to stay in your closet for as long as possible and become hyper wearable, timeless classics. Mm-hmm.
And H Project makes perfect sense because that's obviously, you know, what they aim to do within the whole Renfrew banner. And I think it's a good reminder, you know, we're entering the fall season. I've just gone through the exercise of unsubscribing to so many newsletters.
I need to do that myself.
It was such a nice purge and such a good feeling because it's what triggers my shopping addiction, right?
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's still summer out. Like I don't need to buy leather boots, right? I have enough boots for when it gets cold. But you're right. The whole system is really built so that we're obviously consumers. We're going to buy again and again and just need a reason to do so.
Totally. And one other thing we're trying to be provocative around is we're not shaming people in wanting to buy certain things. Like that is not our job. Our job as a brand is to just do the right thing from the beginning. And at the end of the day, we want to be a desirable fashion brand, just like anybody else. And we want to be a successful business because the larger we get, the more impact we can make. But with the Super Circle partnership, what's cool is we're also enabling people to return garments that are not even our own, with the idea that when they return, wherever it may be, they'll get a credit in our store to reduce the cost of acquiring or buying something from perhaps a more luxury, but yet sustainably made company like our own. And so it's okay to sort of go into fall and still have some desires to buy new pieces. But what we're saying is maybe go in your wardrobe and pick through and see what could be recycled or resold or given to a friend.
Yes.
And that is also a great action that I think more people could be taking.
100%. You were already business owners before and or you've taken a stand, you know, on sustainability with and or what kind of responsibility do you feel you have as leaders of a business and, you know, with the agency, with August as well, you're employing people, you have clients and you're advising a lot of brands on their strategy and positioning. But now you're taking kind of that responsibility to the next step, you know, with this sustainability focus. So what responsibility comes with being a business owner?
It's interesting because we, even in investor pitches, like we're really transparent that we're not coming at sustainable fashion as people who have been embedded in environmental causes.
Right.
What I think is interesting is that we are the regular consumer who just has shone a light on something that we can't unsee. And so the responsibility, at least I feel, is that, you know, we need to act with integrity and transparency around what we're doing. And it doesn't need to be perfect. And it kind of applies to the agency as well. Like, we're always really honest with our clients as we are with our consumer. And I think there's something about always acting with integrity and that responsibility of being honest and not sort of trying to be all things to all people.
Yeah.
That's always served us really well.
Yeah, no, I was thinking integrity, and I think it's our responsibility to really stay true to what we set out to achieve and really be that blinders on and towards the mission as much as we can, because that's really imperative to our values.
What would you say was one of the biggest challenges you face? And this can be, you know, building August, but this can also be with and or maybe going back to when you first became business owners with the agency. What's a challenge you couldn't have foreseen?
They're different. I mean, sticking on Andor for a second, something that was really kind of an obstacle, but also kind of a, like, if I knew in the beginning how dynamic and open to change we needed to be, like, you think you have a plan.
Yeah.
And then the plan is gone. You know, like, you think you know what's next, and then you have a pivot. And so I think being flexible and adaptable is like a challenge and a learning that we've had.
Yeah.
And almost like a happy learning in a way, because it's allowed us to feel a lot more free. I mean, when we first started, we were like, oh, we want to be like a hockey stick. We want to raise a bunch of money and then go for it. And then it was like, no, we actually should go slower. We should organically grow to then go fast. And so it's more like those kind of happy coincidences of like maybe something hard that happens, like losing an investor, but then that causes you to stop.
Yes.
And think. And then actually it's the best thing that ever happened. Mm-hmm. We actually talked about this the other day in the work world, right? Like whether it's employees and somebody who wants to leave or has an opportunity, and sometimes it feels bad at the moment, but then it's actually a happy opportunity.
Yes. Yeah, I think to build on that, in both August and in Andor, it's really what we maybe wouldn't have been able to anticipate is the how dynamic in good ways and in challenging ways the business is. So we had, as an example, a really strong first 2 years of August, and we were like, we're laughing, like, like,
why didn't we do this sooner?
Why didn't we do this sooner? And then, like, boom, like, it really shifted in 2023. So we were getting used to, as business owners, that there might not be this predictability in the way that, you know, you go and you do your job and you collect your salary. And as people from a corporate background, we also have this training where we build budgets, we build forecasts, and they are dynamic, but they're not necessarily that things we catch you off guard.
Yes.
And so same thing with Andor. We had an investor that unfortunately pulled out, which was going to have like a sizable impact on our business. And so then we have to, it's like that finding that balance of looking ahead, but not being too fixed. Because you can, if we were locked into production or a retail space rental or, you know, these big cost centers, we would have been in trouble. And so it's, I think really what's we've learned is that agility and flexibility of having the vision, but also
being okay
having a realistic outlook, which would have been different if we had built the business, I think, like 10 years ago, say.
And do you think there's enough support for women-owned companies? And it's interesting because you have a brand in fashion. We know it's a complaint from many people in the industry that there's not enough support for designers in Canada. Do you think there's enough?
There's more than there was.
Yeah.
I want to be balanced because there are great things happening for female-led businesses.
Yeah.
There's like a lot of energy and time being spent. Like we're so pleased to be able to call ourselves female-founded because we know that that kind of opens up this a certain amount of attention.
Yeah.
I just don't know that it trickles down all the way to the support levels that are actually truly needed. So it's a lot of like great conversations or support from a resources perspective.
Yeah.
But then when it comes to raising capital, you know, our first year at it, I would say that we spoke to like 90% men.
Yeah.
I almost think the other side is almost more frightening currently than the founder side. It's the investment bankers and the VCs. Like there needs to be more women in those seats.
Yeah.
Because I think that will actually do a great service to female-led businesses or minority-owned businesses in raising. But yeah, I'd say that we're off to a better start, but there's a lot of work to be done. You know, BDC's paving the way with Thrive and they're doing great things over there. You know, we've got lots of incubators.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know if there's enough capital both.
Yeah. And I think in terms of capital specifically, there's seasons of what a fund's thesis becomes. Mm-hmm. And so it's really focused on a few different, like, you know, med tech is huge, yeah. AI is huge. And so
deep tech in general.
Yeah. So we don't really fit the traditional thesis of a lot of funds that are supporting women.
Yeah.
So it almost doesn't apply to us.
Yeah. And many women find themselves in the same situation.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So it's not just that there's a lot of, there is, it's great that there's some traction. Is it still underrepresented? 100,000,000%. But it's also dependent on what category or what industry your business is in.
Yeah, to Kristen's point, it's like you have to be female led, but in these 3 to 5.
Yeah, you got to fit
areas where very narrow. We're interested still as investors.
And you've talked about investors and how, you know, the VC world is primarily men. And I think that's common feedback from women in mm-hmm. business. We want more women signing checks. How do we change that?
Yeah. I mean, I think we all need to be more vocal and proud about our progress and our wins. We need to inspire a generation of women who would be going into university and looking at their careers. I think it needs to start earlier. You know, my parents did a wonderful job raising my brothers and I, but, you know, I think from an early age, it was like there was areas that I was kind of naturally going towards, but, you know, I wasn't necessarily shown finance mm-hmm. as an opportunity. You know what I mean? I don't know where that can start, but I just feel like maybe inspiring young women to get involved in the business and finance side would be tremendous. Mm-hmm. Because when women do end up in those seats, there's a real powerful dynamic that can happen mm-hmm. that helps solve a lot of the problems of the ecosystem we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shifting gears, your partners in both your yes. businesses. So obviously this is a winning formula for yes. you, or you would not have launched a yeah. brand together.
This works. Yeah.
And I speak to women entrepreneurs who either, you know, they're either doing it solo. In some cases, they've taken on a business partner. What does having a partner mean for you, and how is that partnership working?
Well, I think it's like a constant sounding board mm-hmm. and sanity check. I think it's great that we have the two together because we're able to openly communicate. And if Andor is taking 95% of my time 1 week or 2 weeks, I can easily say to Katie, hey, can you cover me on XYZ mm-hmm. and vice versa. So we have a really open relationship versus if it was two different makeups of the businesses, yeah. you'd feel like someone was getting perfect. Short on a yeah. mistake.
You're able so to stay in balance.
What yeah. is great about that is that we have that openness. We have these two businesses together. We are able to really stay connected.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's...
Yeah, another good thing is like we started as friends. Mm-hmm. And like we were friends long before we even imagined having one business, let alone two. And so there's just like an innate trust in each other and like love for each other that acts as this really nice foundation. And then the happy coincidence is just how well we work together mm-hmm. and how complementary our personalities and skill sets are. Like there's a lot of people in our world, friends and other business associates, and they look to us and say, wow, you're really fortunate to have yeah. each other, because I do think that going it alone would be a totally different experience. And I think, I don't know that I would be as happy in that scenario. I think I'm one who likes to talk things out. So does Kristen. Like we really value being able to like, you know, we talked about agility and problem solving. I mean, that happens because we have this partnership. Or if one thing bothers me a little bit more and it's kind of rubbing the wrong way, I have somebody who's like, you know what, leave that, you know, let that slide off your back, you know? And sometimes you need to hear that. And you don't always want it to be your partner at home.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to have to go home and air all my dirty laundry to my, you know, to my husband.
Yeah.
He's got his own pile of stuff that he's dealing with. So it is really nice for that mm-hmm. reason too.
How do you see the next couple of years? You're building, obviously, the agency,
yep.
the fashion brand feels like it's still fresh and you've got momentum, you have investors. What's your vision for the next 2 to 3 years?
I can start.
Mm-hmm.
I think for us, one thing that's been really nice about having both the agency and Andor is that it's completely complementary. So, you know, well, we really want to focus on building Andor Collective to be, you know, at a place that it's making the greatest impact. We know at some point there'll be a tipping point of like how we spread and divide our time. Right now, it acts as a huge helpful hand to us to have August supporting the business. It's almost like a client embedded it's like a house brand of August is to have Andor. At some point, we believe that that tipping point will happen where Andor will just be the focus and we will have the agency to support, you know, and the team there, but perhaps in a different weighted way. So for us, I mean, to focus the vision on Andor, we really want to build the business in a manner that allows sustainable growth for the company. That means opening the right doors in the right places. North America is a huge opportunity for us, but so is Europe. Mm-hmm. So we are already talking about what's our strategy outside of North America, because we know that they're just that much further ahead in terms of thinking about sustainability in Europe and in certain parts of Europe. And so I guess you could say for us, our ambition is to open new doors from a wholesale perspective. We have a big and bold vision, which we won't get too deeply into with regards to our own retail environment and what that could look like. And so that's sort of what's to come. And hopefully we can talk with you about that in the coming months as we really iron out what that looks like. And then how do we broaden, you know, our scope outside of the North American boundaries? Because we believe that this is a global brand mm-hmm. and we are excited to build it.
Yeah, we just had our first pop-up last weekend and I think we were walking away from that weekend super inspired and invigorated about in-person experiences. We launched with this direct-to-consumer brand as a way to build a more omni-channel experience. And it was really invaluable, the conversations that we were able to have in just 3 days with all sorts of new people and tell the story and have them touch and feel the product and really understand the vision of the brand. So that's become a really large focus for us, as is looking at new categories and how we can responsibly disrupt in the same way that we've done with apparel and technical knitting into different lifestyle categories.
And my last but favorite question, because there's two of you, I'll ask you for two each. Two pieces of advice to share with fellow women in business, maybe things you've learned, lessons you've acquired, things you wish you knew before going yeah. into business or things you've learned along the way.
I think having that eye on the business and planning, but having that layer of flexibility is the most important thing that we've learned. We worked with a lot of founders that didn't have these base level foundational forecasts or P&L or cost of goods or having that business structure and then planning for all sorts of situations mm-hmm. so you can have that flexibility, I think is paramount. Mm-hmm. And then I always say that self-awareness is the mm-hmm. most important quality that a person can possess, particularly in business. And so I think really having that self-awareness of ourselves, but also from your business and what you're offering is really, really important to be able to be successful.
So first, I think believing in your vision. So have a vision and believe in it, because things will come at you that will mm-hmm. challenge you and perhaps try to throw you off of that. And I think it's really important to stay focused on what you're trying to accomplish and not being afraid of that. And then I'd say the second thing for me is surrounding yourselves with people and a team, even if it's not employees, that are going to support you mm-hmm. in getting where yeah. you want to go. Because I don't think we go it alone. And I think that having support the way Kristen and I have, but we have more than that, I think you underestimate how much that helps in times that are challenging. Mm-hmm. So I would say, like, believe in your vision and surround yourself with good people who have your best interests mm-hmm. in heart and are there to help you and guide you, mm-hmm. you know, mentors also.
Yeah.
And those are really yes. big. Like, valuable. We all need mentors and we all, like, it comes as part of that self-awareness piece is, like, you got to be able to reflect back on the things that you don't know as mm-hmm. much as the things that you do know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that means pulling in, you know, somebody to help guide.
Yeah.
So I think that ecosystem is super important.
I have a Love third that. One.
Okay.
To drop the ego.
Yes.
Good one.
We see
oh, yeah.
it so much. And we also have to check ourselves sometimes.
Yeah. It's we like really do.
In entrepreneurship, there's moments where, I mean, you're doing things that maybe you did when you started out your career or maybe you yeah. never even did no. and it's not below you. And yeah. so that's one thing. And then also from that kind of mentorship and openness to having different perspectives, mm. everyone's perspective is really valuable and can help you learn something new. So taking that ego and leaving it at yeah. the door, I think yeah. is really, really, really important.
And it's a constant exercise, right?
Yes.
It's like the self-awareness piece. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You just got to keep yourself. And we keep each other in check too, which is good.
And it's good lessons for lives. I had yeah. somebody on the show saying, you know, make sure you go to therapy before you start your business or when you start business, because all your shit is going to come up.
Yeah.
Like, it's yeah. so funny.
The your life lessons.
Your yeah. life.
Exactly. Yeah. It's yeah. all going to come facing yeah. you.
Totally.
Yeah. Totally.
Well, thank you so much. Excited to see what happens next for and for August.
Thank
Congrats.
You.
And Fingers crossed for CAFA. We'll be watching.
Thank you so much, Emma. We're so happy to be here. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you to TD Women and Enterprise for their support of The Brand is Female. You've got it in you to succeed. Let TD help guide you. Visit thebrandisfemale.com to learn more.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Brand is Female podcast. It means a lot if you subscribe to our show, leave us a review, and engage with us on social media. A huge thank you to our team who makes these episodes possible. Lina Orbegozo Espinoza is our sound engineer. Jacqueline Cohen is our assistant producer, and Naomi Kixmuller-Gosley is our senior PR manager.